Hello, this is Hunchy Henry Graves, and welcome to The Way. Today, I have a guest speaker, George Harris. He's going to be here talking to us about his experience in the martial arts. George, say hello to the people out there in Radio Land.
Hey, everybody. It's all martial artists, you know, or not.
Oh, you're welcome, man. It's my honor to have you on the show for more than one reason. But we'll get into that in a little bit. But let's talk about the art you use. What type of martial arts do you do? Okay. Well, how long have you been practicing Muay Thai? About 7 years. Okay. Have you participated in any one-on-one matches or like that? And I don't know how they call it. Is it like a, or they don't call it a tournament, or do they call it a tournament? Stand-up matches?
They absolutely have tournaments. If you think about it in the scheme of more traditional kickboxing setups, it's very closely related to that. I have competed in tournament style events on my own, separate from my gym, over the last 2 to 3 years, and it's more of a admittedly, so hey, let's get back in here, see if you can still do some of these things. And I really enjoy the camaraderie that exists amongst the competitors, but also to continue learning from all these really, really talented folks that end up coming to these tournaments to show out. So I have got into that a little bit. Admittedly so, this will probably be the last year of me doing any type of competing. We may drift into maybe the early part of next year as far as doing something as well. But yes, yeah, time for your boy to shut it down. The young cats are getting a lot stronger and a lot faster, and I want to be able to know my name when I'm 50 or 60 years old.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, it's always good to know when you're at your pinnacle and when you're ready to say, okay, pass on the reins to someone else to do what they can do, you know, and show how well they are in their particular discipline of martial arts. When talking about martial arts, when we look at the martial arts, is it any particular style that you like more? Or obviously you like Muay Thai, but if you had to go out and say, well, I like to get started in something, would you pick that as your first thing to get started in, or would you pick something more traditional like Taekwondo, Shotokan, Goju-Ryu, Ishin-Ryu, Okinawan, Judo, Tai Chi? What would you pick as your first thing, or maybe just kickboxing?
You know, I think me to say, you know, one over the other. You know, there's things you might see and you might like. You know, for Muay Thai, for me, and it's like the funniest story ever. Muay Thai, my first real view of it came from a movie, which was a blood sport. A lot of people are familiar, who follow the arts, are familiar with blood sports with Jean-Claude Van Damme. He was fighting this cat that was, you know, competing under the Muay Thai style. And from that point, I was like, you know what I'm saying? That's something kind of interesting. I don't have to find out before. Let me find out a little bit more about this and what this is. And I just kind of fell in love with the art from that point. And I was actually studying from a reading aspect and knowledge to the brain aspect long before I start trying to throw any knees or elbows or anything like that. But, you know, honestly, I can't say that there's one that I would tell someone to maybe start over another one, or even if I was to say, hey, if there's one that I prefer over another. I'm in love with the arts in general. I'm constantly evolving and learning that there's a lot of different things to learn. I mean, honestly, if I was to say anything, I would probably say Jeet Kune Do, which of course was originated by Bruce Lee, because that's probably the most blended of all the arts, where you actually touch elements of a lot of different things. And that's really what I like. I think I'm a purist in the sense that I like the foundational principles that all the arts have to offer. But I don't have a preference of one over another. I've always been a physical guy, as you know. And so I just like seeing how different things work and how I can use my body and how effective it is at doing certain things. And that's really all it is. I don't really have a preference. I mean, if somebody was looking at it from the outside looking in, the thought would be that Muay Thai would be my favorite, but I can't really say that. My first foray into the arts, you know, when I was 5 or 6 years old, was Shotokan. And so I didn't know anything of Shotokan from the time I was 5 or 6 up to the time I was about, you know, 38 years old. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't have a preference. I just love the arts in general.
Well, that's great. You know, some things that I seem to understand about a lot of practitioners of the martial arts, they do find something that they like about a particular art, whether it's, you know, they like the throwing the elbows, they like throwing the knees. Some of them just like throwing kicks in the fists. Some of them like, you know, using sticks, a screamer kind of thing like that.
Sure.
Me, I kind of gravitate towards the sword. I love the sword. But, you know, younger, all I ever wanted to do was probably just fight. I wanted the kumite. I wanted to be sparring.
Right.
You know, and
that's right.
Because that's something I was afraid of fighting when I was coming up, but after a while, after being trained, you know, I found out that I was pretty good at throwing hands and feet. So, you know, I just gravitated towards that. And then I got later into weapons, and then even later now into kata. I'm learning to love kata for the aspect of the mind, body, and spirit, and blending it as one thing. But I was wondering, have you ever used any weapons in Muay Thai, the sword, or used the bow staff, or anything like that? Is anything like that involved in that?
No, I mean, Muay Thai literally is the art of 8 limbs. So it's hands, elbows, knees, feet. Basically, it's using your body from different angles and attack from different angles with different parts of your limbs to either provide defense or inflict some sort of offensive attack. But no, I haven't really got into the weapons too much. I've always really enjoyed more of the close quarter aspects of competition and competing and contact. Not to say that in any way that I'm opposed to sword, or definitely not to scrimmage sticks. I think when I was a kid, I used to love sticks, just don't doing whatever with sticks. I'm more leaning towards the enjoyment of the close quarter combat, and what type of offensive and defensive scenarios I can put myself in and also get myself out of from a close connection type combat scenario. So that's more what floats my boat right now.
Oh, okay. Well, also, you know, talking to my different guests on the show, one of them happened to be the legendary Vic Moore. And, you know, he had the speed contest with Bruce Lee back in, I believe, 67 or 64 in Long Beach. Can't remember the year. I apologize, audience, for that. But I know it was in Long Beach, California, and he beat him in a speed contest. But also, he then beat some of the best fighters around. But Grandmaster Moore, he always says the things like, there's only so many ways that you can block, so many ways you can kick, so many ways you can punch. You know, you teach people how to block, kick, punch. You know, even though they say they got different styles or different ways of doing it, but there's only so many ways to do these things. You know, do you agree with that? I mean, the concept of throwing a proper punch or the concept of throwing a proper kick or proper knee or proper elbow, you mean, is a basic theory. Do you agree with that?
Well, first off, there is zero, and I mean zero, second guessing when it comes down to something that Vic Moore says. If he says it, it's right. And I absolutely do agree with that. I think it really comes down to how often you train one particular thing. I mean, you can always, and you know, we have mentioned, we have talked about, I think offline at one point, how you evolve. I don't really think it's a cap when it comes down to the arts. You get better and better. I mean, if you just throw a straight right all day long, and that's all you do, constantly, all you do, I don't care what kind of defense somebody puts up against it. If you're consistently throwing that right, because that's all you've been practicing, at some point that straight right is going to have some consistent contact with that individual's head or chest, wherever you're actually throwing it at, because you've been practicing it so much. So I agree. I mean, there's only so much I believe that you can do. There are so many ways you can actually throw a kick, throw a punch, you know, what have you. You do see folks getting these, are coming out with these creative ways to, you know, front kick or do roundhouses at different angles and things like that, which in my opinion, I think sometimes it causes you to lose power, because the idea behind the defense, when you're not talking about the spiritual aspect, is to get yourself or other people around you from out of harm's way. So I'm not trying to be pretty in doing anything that I do. I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm throwing a punch, throwing an elbow, throwing a knee, and I'm losing power. So I practice with that in mind. I may keep the heavy bag for, you know, 30, 45 minutes straight, all with one leg, all at the same angle, all hitting the same spot. So that if it just really came down to it and I threw a kick, I know it's going to land in one particular spot with the kind of power that I believe necessary to render my opponent at least temporarily incapacitated, so I can either retreat or continue on with some kind of finishing efforts.
Okay.
Which we hope it never comes to.
Yes, yes. I mean, yeah, I always say the greatest fighter don't have to leave left a finger in combat. You know what I mean? I can, like, just either talk to you so I can get away from that situation altogether. You know what I mean? And that way it wasn't be an issue between you and I or whoever the person would be that I'm in that conflict with, because it's great to be able to talk things through. But when I can't talk it through, I want to be able to at least defend myself. And talking about that, I heard you say something about mental aspect. Which one is the strongest in your opinion, mental, physical, or spiritual, or they all even?
Nah, I can't say that they're even. I think your mental and your mental and your spiritual has to be on point even before you can think about jumping into the physical part of it. And I think that's a lot of what people miss, and especially, you know, I will travel around to like different tournaments, and more often than not, I'm just there to spectate, just there to watch. And you know, we'll see, you know, some folks who appear, especially especially when they're warming up, to be extremely talented. You know, just on look-see from the outside looking in, you would expect those folks to be tremendously successful in competition, whereas they struggle mightily. And you can tell sometimes when folks, you know, hearts aren't in it. You can tell the individuals who might have came into the situation believing they were better than what they were, and also thinking that they could just let their physical prowess dictate what actually goes on. But I've seen many of men, and I know you have as well, who've had all the physical tools and all the physical capabilities, but because they didn't have the right mindset and also the right spiritual makeup, they suffered in competition, and they've known defeat quite a bit. And honestly, this is what's taken a lot of people away from the arts, because you go into it with one singular expectation, and even though you have these incredible teachers out there, including like yourself, who,
well, thank you,
you know, are giving, well, no, this is, I know firsthand, and you know, you're giving folks everything from a well-rounded view. You're giving them the mental, the spiritual, and also the physical tools to be successful. But everybody doesn't pick up on that, because maybe they came in just with the thought, hey, I want to be physical. I just want to be able to really jump on somebody if I have to and beat them down. But, you know, the ones that really embrace the arts for what it is, and they pick up all three of those really, really critical elements, are the ones that end up being the most successful. But I do not believe that any artist can be successful, whether it's in competition or just a successful martial artist just in general, even if you don't compete, if you do not have the proper mental and spiritual makeup. And that's a growth. That's not something that sort of hits you just out of the box. I mean, it may have been like that for some folks, and maybe those are the ones we would consider the most exceptional, you know, martial artist. But for most, and I think honestly, I think it's for everybody, the spiritual and mental makeup, as well as the physical, those things are growth. I think that happens over time. And that's the reason I'm somebody who does not believe that there's a cap on evolution when it comes down to your skills in terms of how you ascend to another level. I just don't believe that.
Okay.
I think you can always be better.
I believe that also. I mean, being and becoming good at anything does take practice, and it does take repetition. But also, to be good at something takes a mental toughness and a spiritual clearness to get you to that point. And I find it hard pressed to say, is my mental capacity stronger than my spiritual capacity, or is my spiritual capacity stronger than my mental capacity? Because both of them have to coexist. And I don't know, do one have a slight edge over another for it to be more important or less important? But I do know, if you don't have all the those things, those ingredients, then you don't have the whole pie made if you leave one of those ingredients out. Because either the physical have a realm in being good in the martial arts. It's like faith without work is dead. You know, you can have all the faith you want, but if you don't put in the work, all that ain't mattering nothing. So you do have to put in some physical effort to do things, you know, and whether it's 30% physical effort, or, you know, 20%, or whether it's a 90% or whatever it is. But you cannot put more, I don't believe, like you're saying, more physical than mental. I don't think you can put more mental or spiritual. I mean, I don't think you can put less spiritual value and mental value over being more physically inept, because the physicality, you know, what if you break your leg, one leg, you still can't fight? You got two arms and a leg left. So you got to be mentally tough to say, hey, I'm still going to survive this, and spiritually fortitude to have that mental thing follow through. So I'm in wholehearted agreement with you with that. Now, in looking at martial arts today, you know, I've seen this extreme martial arts, and I always put it to the test. I'm like, oh, do you like extreme? Do you like the traditional? Is it a place for extreme martial artists? Because they're athletes. I mean, some of them can do things I can't do. And I don't know whether when I was in my top physical condition, able to do those things the way they do it, because I was more the kind of person who wanted to be mind, body, you know, spirit, not in particularly that order, but I wanted all three aspects to be there to be a traditionalist martial artist, because that's what I seen at my time. You know what I mean? I didn't see a lot of double backflips, a tuck, and then spin the bow in my hand, throw it up in the air and catch it and still, you know, fight someone. What I seen to me was, if I have the bow in my hand, I can use it to defend myself against people trying to hurt me. I don't walk around with a bow, but if I pick one up off, if I pick a stick up off the ground, a pretty solid stick or broom handle or anything else, I can still help that to help me to defend myself if I was being attacked. So,
sure.
You know, yeah.
You know, and to the question of whether or not there's a place for, you know, extreme arts, I don't know if I'm versed enough to be able to say it's not. I mean, I think it is. The only thing that I would say in reflection is that anything that goes on in the arts needs to be from a pure mindset and not just for show.
Okay.
It always disturbs me when elements of the arts are, if it just becomes just simply a show. Like, even though I'm always in awe at some of the aerial feats and things like that the folks may do, you're never going to catch me at one of those shows where you see the guys jumping off of other people's shoulders and, you know, kicking 15 boards, you know, out of the air and all kinds of stuff. I mean, that's great to be able to say that you can do that. But, you know, we kind of grew up rough.
Yeah.
I helped you connect in one of those alleys off of Miller or St. Clair, and you know, somebody is you know, trying to get at you. You being able to kick 15 boards out the air is not going to be able to help you right
now. Not at all.
Not saying it's not a place for it. You know, I think I'll be out of line to say that it was. I mean, because it may be. But I can just say that, you know, some of that stuff is not for me. I would just say, even with the extreme competition, that's great. Actually, I enjoy watching it as long as it doesn't get buffoonish.
Well, I like watching it also, but like I said, again, it is not something that I would choose to participate in. Now we're getting into a different realm in martial arts tournaments. I'm looking at a trend that's going on. You know how we used to love getting those big 6 feet trophies and 4 feet trophies and stuff like that? They're going a lot now to medals. And also, I remember years and years ago, probably back in 2007 or 2009, I gave out championship rings. You know, these little rings for competing. You got first place or grand champion, I give rings out. Now I see they're starting to bring that back in karate for like rings and medals. Not that we do it for a ring or a medal or a trophy. We do it for the aspect of just competing and having a good day and, you know, meeting other people and working on your technique to see how well it works and refining your technique. But just a question. If you were going to a competition, would you prefer a competition with more trophies, more medals, or a combination of medals and rings, or a combination of medal rings and trophy, or what would you like to see?
That's a tough one. I mean, honestly, and I mean, I think you know this, I never really cared about that. You know, when I was much younger, and I'm still really competitive, but when I was much younger, I was so competitive. For me, it was just about winning or losing. So I really didn't care about what size trophy I was taking home or whether I was taking a medal home or or anything like that. But I would say there's definitely a place for it because, you know, folks like to be reminded of their accomplishments. And I don't think it's always about, hey, I want to be able to show everybody else what I did. But sometimes you just want to be reminded of what you've been able to accomplish because, as you know, to put yourself in a position to compete, that's different than just learning the art. That's a lot of hard work that goes into getting yourself in a position to be able to compete, at least be able to compete at a high level and be successful. So sometimes having those things to be able to, you know, maybe look and be reminded of your hard work is really, really great as far as what the actual award is. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I necessarily would have a preference. I also think there's a level of maturity that comes with it. If you have somebody that's been competing in the arts like a really, really long time, like you said early on, all it was trophies, you know. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have, you know, a room full or a wall full of trophies. And so now you have some variety with getting rings or getting, you know, medals. I see a lot of the larger tournaments now, they also give out swords to the grand champion winners at a different levels, which I think is awesome. Just to be able to look and see a display of, just showing symbolism from all your hard work, you know. But mm-hmm. I don't really say that I've never really cared about trophies so much, but for me, I don't see one as being an advantage over another, unless the tournament itself providing something symbolized something else. Like, for instance, if you get gold medal in Taekwondo from the world championships, or I should say U.S. championships, then you know that means that you got invited to the Olympics. Whether or not you win is a whole other story, but it means that that was your ticket, basically, to go to the Olympics. So that may signify, you know, something else. But the thing I also caution folks, you know, is really make sure that you're pure in your thinking in terms of what the arts are, what you're getting out of it, what you're putting into it. Because, like, literally right now, it is zero stopping me from driving around the corner to a trophy shop and saying, hey, make me six of the biggest karate trophies that you have and make sure you put my name on the bottom that says grand champion, and I ain't done nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's also something, you know, I'm not saying to be careful of, but it's unfortunate, just like any other sport, sometimes things get watered down.
Yes.
I can order a black belt from Amazon. I can order a gi from Amazon. I can order all kinds of stuff just to make myself look like a genuine article until it comes time for me to show that I'm the genuine article. And so I've never been a show approved guy, never worried about whether folks thought I knew or didn't know or anything like that, never worried about it, because I wasn't in it for anybody in the first place. I was always just in it for me, so I never was worried about the trophies or the medals or any kind of accolades or anything that came along with it. If I had an opportunity to learn from someone in defeat or even in victory, that was always a plus for me.
Oh, wow. Yes, that's very good. You know, that's hopefully that martial artists are listening to you out there and they're hearing what you're saying about it, because it's not so much about winning a particular prize. It's the pride you get in yourself to seeing that, you know, the technique you choose to use that day, it worked better than someone else's technique, because it is a matter of timing, speed, balance, and all of that, whether yours got in before the other person. Because on any given day, if you're training, everyone's training the same, training hard, that person could be the victor and you could be on the other end of that. But the mental part of this is way out there, because not enough people, I don't think, really realize that karate is not about just punching and kicking and blocking. It's about you, yourself, about a journey you're taking down this road of life and learning how to cope with it in a martial art atmosphere is learning how to cope with it in all atmosphere. Because whatever sport can teach you to defend the most precious thing you have is your life. What other sport can teach you that? You know, and also teach you about, you know, what it is to win and lose. Because, I've been places where everybody got to win. You know, all the kids got to have a good feeling about themselves. When I was coming up, if I was playing football for Clarendon football team and I wasn't good enough to play the first string, you know where I sat on the bench until I got good enough.
That's right.
But
that's right.
These days, everybody got to get out there and play. You know, everybody got to, you know, participation trophy.
Right.
You know, I think that's setting everybody up for when they get older, if the boss tell them, hey, you did a bad job, or no, you're fired because you didn't do good. They're coming back to work with guns and want to kill everybody in there because they didn't like something somebody said, or, you know, it's just the world is a fast moving entity now, you know, and
I'm glad you touched on that, because, we talked about, you know, a lot of this stuff a lot, and I know some time ago we were talking about how, especially in the States anyway, how the arts are getting watered down to an extent, because you can have anybody who has a fair sense of intelligence when it comes down to business operations open up a dojo, but they really do not have the sufficient enough skills to run it from a teaching of the arts aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of folks that go because, you know, they got a lot of glitz and glamour. You know, they have all the proper decor, for lack of better words, up on the walls. And the kids go in there and they learn some fair basics. But then also there's a lot of that participation encouragement, but also participation rewards that really doesn't get them any further than what they are, only for somebody to ask, hey, when are we going to go to XYZ tournament? And they go and they try to figure out, hey, why am I never successful? Because you're giving folks the false sense of accomplishment when they're really not performing at the level that they should, or I should say that they could perform at. Should is relative.
Yes.
But at the level that they could perform at,
yes.
You know, they're just not doing it, but at the same time, you're still rewarding them. So I think it sets up a bad precedent, and I agree with you. I mean, because if it starts when they're young, it carries on until they're older, and not just in their arts life, but also into their personal and professional life as well. I mean, you come to believe that, hey, just because I show up, that means I'm guaranteed something, and that's just not the way it works.
Yes. Yeah, and that never does work in anything. You know, you just can't show up on a job and because you look good or dress good, expect to get paid and don't do anything. You know,
no,
you got to do something,
right.
You know, and you got to do something relative to the task at hand. And I think, you know, for the parents out there who are thinking of something to put their child in, a martial art program would be great for them, and finding instructors and people who just care, like yourself, bro, who want to help someone develop themselves for their best, you know. And at that point, you find a mentor. And mentoring is really important because, as you know, Harold Jackson was mine as well as Sensei.
Right.
But mentoring, you know, to make you believe in yourself. And I think a lot of kids today in martial arts, they jump from one school to another school. Oh, they don't teach me how to do this kata here. I'm going to go over there and learn that kata over there. Or they don't teach me how to do this here. I'm going to go there. Even though Sensei put in all the hard work with you, later on you decide that you want to skip and go somewhere else just because you feel it. Not what the Sensei gave you to get to that point, but you feel it that, I can get more knowledge over here. And sometimes you may, and sometimes it may be not good, you know, because I always say dance with the person that brought you to the dance. If I'm taking a young lady to a dance, you know, I don't want her dance with every boy there, or she don't want me dance with every girl there. And when I get ready to go home, we should go home together. You know what I mean? So if we're going to get to that plateau, it's okay to have other people come in and help you train, I think, but if you're going there with your sensei or with your instructor and the person care about your development, he's going to make sure you do get these other things that you want to, that you're looking for. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I think it's a two-way street because I think something has been lost, especially with the advent of these more, you know, upscale, you know, dojos and also maybe this new age approach to teaching. Is the proper setting of expectations because, one, you know, and this happens all the time, I'm sure you see it, you know, a child or their parents are coming there and, you know, maybe they want to learn karate because they watched this really, really cool movie, or maybe they watched the Ninja Turtles and they want to learn how to do backflips and, you know, run up a wall and do a backflip off the wall and, you know, swing a sword or swing a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to beat up the monsters, and that's cool as far as a preface with them having that attitude coming in the door. But I think at that point, it's really, really important that the sensei or the other instructors that are associated with the school really have a frank conversation with the student and also with the parents to let them know kind of what the program is, what the protocol is going to be, and the things that they're going to learn. So that they don't get stale. And also so they know it's like going to be some hard work because, yeah, at some places, which if you ask me, I think it's really just gymnastics. They pose as, you mean, whatever it is that you want or you're trying to get out of it. But I think it's really important that you have, like, those really, really frank conversations so that expectations on both sides are understood so that, hey, what you're actually looking to deliver, if it's not in line with what they're looking to get, and then maybe that's not a student that you take on.
Oh, well, and, yes.
You know, and do that because a lot of times they will, like you said, they'll break away and they'll go somewhere else and they'll learn something more in line with what they wanted to learn, you know, from another, you know, teacher. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's kind of all depends on the expectation on the front end or setting those expectations on the front end, I think is critical.
I believe it is, too. I mean, sometimes you just, you know, I used to say to a parent that would bring their child and I have a little interview with the child and see whether or not it's a good fit. And then afterwards, I would just say, you know, I don't think this school is conducive to your child learning, to what you're trying to get, you know, because maybe they were looking for, some of them came in and they have the little kid in there with them. The kid don't know nothing about karate, but they want to do Muay Thai or they want to do kickboxing. They want to do MMA. And I say, well, I'm not that kind of school. So I don't think we can adequately fulfill the needs of your child, your son or your daughter, because I'm not going to teach the little kid how to pound another kid in the face or, you know, like that. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. They looking for MMA because they seen on TV can do a blind back fist or, you know, get them in some kind of hold and break the arm, you know, or whatever. But you do have to have those kind of conversations. I'm not saying that MMA is any more or any less violent or any more violent, but it's just not the kind of martial art I want to teach to a student.
Well, even at that, I mean, that's a really, really good point. And I think it's a lot of confusion with, you know, folks who actually watch, you know, MMA, whether they're watching UFC or Bellator or some of the more regional groups that, you know, put on, you know, productions and things like that. MMA is just mixed martial arts. So all it means is there's like a combination of different styles and the folks that are competing, or even an individual that's competing, he may have various styles in his belt or his repertoire, but also it may be someone who is a great stand-up artist against somebody who's, you know, a great Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist. So MMA in itself is not a style. It is not, it's a combination of arts for a production that, you know, actually comes together. But the thing that I like to, you know, tell folks a lot is, you know, again, when you're talking about MMA, if somebody ever was to come, and again, I'm not a coach, I'm not a teacher, I don't have a dojo, but if I was instructing somebody who did, if a student was to come, or a prospective student was to come and say, hey, I want to learn MMA, I think it would be very important for the sensei to explain to the student that MMA is a bunch of different arts. So if you ultimately have aspirations to compete in some sort of mixed martial arts circuit, you have to start with a foundation. You have to, you know, learn basics before you do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you just say, hey, I'm just going to go in there, I'm just going to fight.
Yeah.
And the other thing about that is folks kind of learn really early who decide, hey, I'm going to go compete like they do in mixed martial arts. They learn, like, really early that you got to be all the way about that life.
Yes.
There's not a half life with that.
No.
Because there's no striking, and then once that punch, that kick connects, we stop and you get a point. There's none of that.
Right.
When you get punched in the mouth, you also get kneed in the mouth. You get elbowed in the mouth. It's not stopping until you fall. So
yeah.
Everybody ain't about that life. And they don't realize that because it looks great on TV. It looks pretty, especially when, you know, you have two folks that contrast really well in terms of fight. Maybe you have two stand-up fighters, but one will have a taekwondo base and another one has a boxing base. Sometimes it's fun to watch, but I try to remind folks, those punches hurt.
Yeah.
That ain't just pretty. Those punches hurt. So you better get a foundation of self-defense and how to protect yourself and have an understanding of how to throw these punches from different angles, how to block from different angles, how to parry, you know, how to steep. how to bob, how to weave. You need to learn all of those things. If you don't, yeah, you'll probably be playing like table tennis in a couple of weeks because then you'll realize it's not your sport.
It's not for you. You know, I always told people when they come into the dojo, I say, you know, you come in here and you say you want to be a warrior, or you say you got a heart of a lion. I said, but you know, when it's come time to do things that lions do, most people ain't ready to do that. You know, when you got to do what a lion got to do, you really don't want to do it. Or when it come time to do what a warrior have to do, a lot of people are not willing to step up and be that person that's going to stand up for the weaker person, or, you know, stand up for the right thing. And, you know, the you know, they don't want to do that. It looks good. It sounds good. They want to be thought of that way. But to be a true martial artist is accepting your world and your responsibilities for the world that you live in and for the people that's in your circle. And sometimes, even though you know, if you're going down the street and you see a kid lost or get hurt, you know, you're going to stop and help them. You know, or you see a woman getting beat, you want to stop and help her. Or see a man getting beat, or a police officer getting ravaged or whatever. You know, you want to do the right thing at the right point. And martial artists, they don't have that problem when it comes times to doing the right thing. Most martial artists who practice the art of being, you know, Budo, is trying to live a code and live up to that code of being and doing the right thing. Do we fall short? Yes, we may fall short. But for the most part, these people are living it, like you said, about that life. A martial artist is about the life of martial arts. If you become an MMA person and you're about a point fight in life, then when you get a point and a person starts hitting you, you're going to wonder, well, why he still hitting me? I got a point. Well, they don't stop because you're getting a point. That's a different kind of, that's a different thing. You know, let's not get those two aspects of the martial arts confused. You know, so that's a very good point you brought up. I mean, for real, I've seen people, and when sparring inside the dojo, my kids, they sparring each other, and one guy thought he got a point, and he stopped, and the guys kept hitting him. I said, well, why did you stop? I got a point. Did that stop him from punching you? No. Why did you block? Because I got a point. You know, it's trying to get them to understand that it don't stop just because you think you got a point or they thought they got a point. You know, and this kind of thing, you have to be always aware. You know, yeah, there are different rules for different segments of the martial arts. For Muay Thai, stand-up, MMA, point fighting, you know, there's different rules. Continuous fighting. I kind of like continuous fighting in the karate circuit, too, because at the end of 2 or 3 minutes, the person who you looked at or seemed to got the best of the other person, that's the winner. It ain't no second guessing that. It ain't, he got 6 points, he got 5 points, and always, you know. So it is an aspect of it when you make it that way. But also, you know, we do play these little dojo games or sparring games. But these games, hopefully, if people use them in the right way, when it comes time to defend yourself, you can use what you've learned in that practice or in that play practice or whatever you may call it to really adequately defend yourself when it comes time for you to protect yourself or your loved one. You know, that's my whole thing. I don't want no one to attack a member of my family, and I'm standing there and I'm helpless or feeling helpless. Yeah, feeling helpless because you can do something.
The last thing comes into play because it's bad enough if you don't do it that you can do anything physically. But when your mind already tells you, hey, I know I'm not going to be able to do anything. And you know, you had an old joke going around like the big guy smacked your mama. You go to your mama and say, Mama, what you did to that man to make him so mad, make him smack you?
Oh, my goodness.
With our mama, but
it wouldn't happen with our mama. No.
Nah, we probably wouldn't have to do that. We wouldn't have to do that with her, though.
Nah, she'd have took care of that herself. But for sure, we wouldn't have been asking her what you did. They'd be pulling us off that person, you know, right away.
No question. He wouldn't have lasted very long.
Yeah. That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. You got to approach it right, man. You always got to approach the reasons why that's the same thing with anything in life, man. You got to have a reason for why you're approaching it, you know. If it was up to me, and I'm not a president of anything, but, you know, if I had some control of, you know, what goes on in schools and things like that, and similar to what they do in the Orient still right now, that's part of curriculum that folks are learning the arts. It's just part of what you do when you're going through your your early schooling. I mean, it's foundational principles.
Yeah.
And I think it should be here as well. I mean, it's so much grounding and so much goodness from a definitely from the mental and spiritual aspect, but also the physical conditioning that these kids are getting at such a young age. Don't even get me started on, you know, the epidemic with childhood obesity and things like that right now. It is because we're not putting them in positions to where they can be successful.
Yes.
With their bodies.
Right.
Because, you know, we're just promoting eating cheese pizza and, you know, whatever else. You know what I mean? So
being on video games on the TV all day and, you know, and that kind of stuff, instead of getting out there playing and running and, you know, enjoying, you know, what we enjoyed as kids and things like that. But that is a good opportunity. But you know what? And if we would make it almost like a mandatory thing in schools and stuff like that, it'll be somebody who would want to sue someone, because the way people got things now, you know, if you look at me wrong, I can say, I don't like you because you look at me wrong, I'm going to sue you. Or I don't like that karate technique, it made me feel inferior. You know, I've seen people talk about in the military, they got these timeout cards or stress cards. If the enemy attacking you, you put a stress card up, you think you're going to stop shooting? If the bad guy robbing you and you put a stress card up, you think he's going to stop punching you or robbing you? I mean, you know, we have to get back to teaching kindness, but also teaching about control and how to realize that you being here on this earth, you have just as much right to breathe air as the next person, have just as much right of freedom of liberty as the other person. So you don't have to walk around in fear. No one have the right to come and take what's yours that you work for, including taking your life. You know, we should be able to defend ourselves like that, not to go out and be bullies. I don't like bullies.
No, it's not a good look. That's not a good look.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, if you are a parent and you have a child that's getting into the arts for the purpose of being able to prey on other, quote unquote, in their mind anyway, weaker kids, that's just wrong. You need to have a conversation with them ahead of time. But honestly, if they get with the right dojo, that's going to be broken out of them anyway.
But real quick. Yes, real quick.
So,
because Sensei is not having that, you know. And you know what? Another thing I like to touch on, too, because I know you don't really go by any title, as great as you've been doing with the martial arts and as good as you are. You know, to me, inside of my karate school, my dojo, when they call me Sensei, it's just as well as them calling me Shihan, Kiyoshi, Renchi, Sabanem, Sifu, or whatever. You know, saying the word just teacher or Sensei is a great aspect and a great respect, because all you're saying is one who came before me, who have the knowledge to show me what I'm trying to learn. That's what a sensei is. But not only knowledge about the art, but knowledge about life. You know, you may want to go out, sensei, this person beat me up in school, I want to go do it. You know, sensei may tell you the right approach to do, instead of going there and want to fight the guy or take a pair of nunchucks in there and beat the person up. He may give you really good advice on how to handle that, so both of you guys come out winners. You know, I don't know what's going on in a lot of martial arts schools, but I do know at my academy, we just come there to learn the arts, practice the arts, understand the arts, develop the arts, grow with the arts. That's what we're looking to do there, you know. And a lot of times I evolved. I remember when I first started teaching, I was teaching this way. Then a few years later, I was teaching that way. So martial arts helped me to grow. You know, oh, but you're a black belt. No, I'm ever evolving, ever learning how to do the simple things a little bit better. Because I always believe that the basics are ordinary, but what you put into your basics made them extraordinary. That is the secret. If there's any secret to be given, you know, hard work is going to always pay off. You know, just keep driving on that. You know, is anything you would like to tell any of the young martial artists as far as any wisdom to put on them? We have a few minutes left.
Well, there's a couple of things. One of the big things is commit. When you do a commit early on, just like anything else, there's going to be a lot of difficulties. I can't say that I fell in love with it The first time around, well, actually, when I first got introduced, I was somebody's punching bag. So we'll leave them nameless for right now, just for right now. So I'm not going to say that I just fell in love with it right away. But as I learned and I had, you know, realized that I did have the ability, which everybody does, the capability, I should say, to have, you know, reasonable amount of success as an artist, I mean, I just kind of fell in love with it. So the first thing is just to commit. Don't, you know, step in there and expect, you know, after 3 weeks that you're going to be a black belt. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Commit to it. Also, the things that go along with competing as an artist outside of your training in the dojo, commit to that as well. And that includes keeping your health right, making sure that you put the right things in your body. And not just not for the students, but also for the teachers as well. Because it's kind of hard for you to instruct the part if you're not living the part yourself.
Yes.
You know, so I can't come to you to teach me a roundhouse if you can't even stretch enough to properly perform one up to a certain level at a certain height of someone's head. So, you know, physical fitness is just paramount. So making sure that you're doing the right things as far as putting the right things in your body, not fooling with so much of the sugar day in and day out, getting more fruits and vegetables. I know this sounds kind of cliche, but it's a reason why these things are being said for such a long time. If your whole day consists of you eating meat and potatoes, which was like a big thing, like when we were growing up, they say, hey, you need to put some meat on your bones. Well, everybody that used to consume nothing but meat and potatoes when we was growing up, they're sick right now.
Yeah.
If not dead. And I'm not wishing that, you know, of course, on anybody. We all have suffered or do suffer with certain health ailments, but it typically comes from what we put in our bodies. So make sure you have an understanding of putting the right things in your body. If you don't know what the right things are, fruits and vegetables are the right things. So eat all of that that you want and limit the other stuff.
Okay.
And then you'll go far. But just commit to being the best that you can each and every day. I mean, don't quit. It could be the best thing for your life. And also, that's the thing, for your life. Being a martial artist is a lifelong thing. It does not, you know, stop. You know, if you get started when you're 5, it does not stop when you're 18 years old and you leave the house or you go off to college or start your life somewhere else. It doesn't stop. You have the ability, if you don't even have a dojo, to practice in your garage, practice in your living room.
That's it.
You can always constantly work on elevating your mental, your spiritual, and your physical game in terms of the arts. One of the greatest experiences I had was several years ago, and I know we talked about this, and I had the opportunity to visit Shaolin and just to see how much time is spent with meditation and also through vocal instruction versus actual movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most impressive thing I've ever seen in my life. Definitely going back again. Felt like I wanted to cry. That time I didn't, but it was just amazing to see. And so then when they approach the physical aspect of what's going on or what they need to do, it's so much more fluid because their mind is clear, their spirit is right. So, you know, focus on those things and you'll be successful. Again, arts don't stop. I mean, once you get in it and you realize it's a love for it, it doesn't go away. When we were kids, we used to learn because our parents would tell us, from biblical teachings, train up a child in the way he should grow, and when he grows old, he won't depart from it.
Yes.
There is no difference when it comes down to arts.
Yeah.
Train up a child, whether it's somebody training the child or child training up himself, once you realize you have a love for it, that will stay with you forever. Even if you were to disappear from it for 5 or 6 years, yes, you won't be as skillful when you jump back into it, but the love doesn't die, and you get back into grinding with it. You fall, and that's kind of what happened to me. You know, because there's some time away from it for me, but it was always knocking on the door. It was always knocking on the door, calling like, "Hey, man, come on back, come on back, come on back."
Yeah.
And it wasn't really settled until I went back.
And when you went back, you felt good.
Felt great.
Yeah. That's the key to it all. You know, and a lot of things that you were saying, you know, when you go to the dojo and retrain, or if you miss some training, you go back in. Please, again, I'm going to keep emphasizing this to people. Start with those basics, man. You know, learn how to bring that knee up, chamber that leg, and then commit to a front kick. Put it out there, bring it back. Same thing and doing your side kick. You got to always bring those knees up. And you should always have those knees slightly bent when you're in your stances, because before you move forward or backwards, the knees going to have to be bent in a certain direction anyway. When you're moving forward, they can't be straight, you know, then bend them and move. You're wasting time. You know, I believe in the economy of motion. You know, I like to study how bones work, how muscles work, and things like that. I like kinesiology. I read as much as I can about it. I didn't get to formally, you know, go to a university and get any kind of degree in kinesiology, but I studied it well enough to find out how to put the application into practice. And I think that's what helped me a lot with my speed coming up. I was always pretty fast, and people were like, how fast are you? And once I put on a speed contest or done something to show them, they was like, wow, how did you do that? To me, it was nothing. It was just like breathing. You know, but to other people, right, it's like something magic. And just like what you were saying, if you practice the arts, all of this become basic and just nothing to you. But when you don't practice it, you know, it seems like it's so hard to do until you take that one step in it. And after you keep doing it for so long and keep going over it, pretty soon it's just like breathing, drinking a glass of water. You know, it's nothing to it. It's just,
right,
you know, that's the way it is. Man, you know, it was great having you on the show today, and your insight and your way that you think about the martial arts. I believe we're going to get a lot of calls in, and, you know, wanting to talk to you about it. And if you would, if it come an opportunity for me, I would get them your permission. I would like them to get in contact with you for that. I know my guys are waiting for you to come up here to put on a little Muay Thai demonstration at the dojo, so we can't wait to have you come here. And they've been asking for you. They've been asking for you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I think it's going to be a great day. But nutrition, they said you touched on that. Being committed, you touched on that, you know. And persevering, you know. Persevering is, wow, you know, just to get with something and stick with it, you know, and don't give up. You know, you like you said, you might fall back for a minute or a year or two or three or whatever, but then you seem to go back to it, raise up a child in the way they should be, like you were saying, you know, they don't depart from it. And that was great advice, I think, for anyone who was listening out there. And we're looking forward to having George Harris back on here and getting back with him and seeing the progress that he makes through the years and the progress that he already made. And guys, I'll let you know when he's in town, because I know a lot of you guys are going to come by, meet him, and maybe share a workout with him, but just insight, thoughts, and things like that. He'll be a very good person to talk to. And appreciate you so much today, brother, you know, and I know Mom will be proud of us both. And I don't know what to say, man. This was a great honor for me today. Great honor.
Me as well, man. Great to hear you, man. It was a blast. Love to do it again.
Yeah. Hey, a blast, man. You're telling your age, man. You know, is that the words they use today, blast?
Man, I don't know what they use anymore.
Cool.
I'm just talking, I guess. I don't know. I asked somebody earlier to give me a few ticks, and they didn't know what I was talking about. They thought I was talking about bugs. And I'm just like, hey, can I get some time? You know? I don't know what they talk about nowadays, man.
Terminology.
I'm here, man, and loving life.
That's it. Terminology, brother. All right. Again, thank you all out there in Radio Land. You've been listening to The Way with Hunchy Henry Graves, known as Kiyoshi Henry Graves. You guys take care of yourself. God bless you. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you guys and sharing next week with you on the show what we got going on. Until then, I would like to say, Domo Aigato, Gazanamas. Us.